This is CBS Eye on the World, Behind the Black with Bob Zimmerman. I'm John Batchelor. Bob, a very good evening to you. We've got lots of wonderful launch stories, very positive stories. Even when they don't launch, they learn things. Is that correct, Bob? I wanted to go back over that over these years. The so-called failure to launch is not a failure as we understand it. It's a learning experience. Is that an accurate way
to see it? Always. It's always the way to look at it. Always. Of course, you really do not want a failure that causes a loss of life, but any failure in engineering is a learning experience if you approach it right. You don't simply just say, oh, we can't do this anymore. You say, well, what did we do wrong and how can we fix it? That's exactly right, John.
We go to the India Space Agency, ISRO, Bob's used to be favorite big space outfit. What are they up to, Bob?
This is India. I've got two stories from India, and they both indicate strongly how India is becoming, is working very hard to catch up to China and the U.S. and Russia and become a major space power. The first story is from ISRO, that's India's space agency, which is still a very powerful entity and producing good stuff and getting more aggressively producing more stuff because of competition. They did their second test of their own mini reusable shuttle. This is similar to an X-37B. They call it pushback. And this is a drop test from a helicopter. The second time they did it, I got a picture of the vehicle as it was about to land. It is an engineering prototype. This is not the actual vehicle that would fly in orbit, but they're testing its ability to robotically, once dropped from a helicopter at about 3 miles altitude, control itself, find the runway, line itself up with the runway, and then come down and land successfully. And they did this test yesterday, and succeeded and was able to come in for a landing. They what's interesting is they actually reused the same vehicle from the previous test that they did, about a year ago. And so they are not only testing the ability to create an X-37B, they are testing reusability. And all of this technology can be scaled up to larger shuttles to bring cargo and people into outer space. So China, this is an example of India's government agency doing stuff. And the second story, John, has to do with a private Indian startup rocket company called Agnikul. There are two such companies in India. The other is called Skyroot. And that Skyroot has already done some suborbital test flights of its rocket. Agnikul was going to do its first suborbital test flight actually today, but they scrubbed it during a launch countdown early in the week. And they saw some things they didn't quite like, so they wanted to make sure everything was going to be right. So they scrubbed it, and they'll reschedule when they know better. What makes this story interesting is that this is a private company building a private rocket for competition against ISRO, in fact. But they were going to launch from their own private launch pad that they own that is within ISRO's main spaceport. And the reason that they own a launch pad within ISRO's spaceport is because the Modi government basically adopted the idea of capitalism in space a few years ago, and it told ISRO that it must make its facilities available to private companies, and it must provide aid to those companies and assistance whenever it can. And so Agnikul took advantage of that to put in their own space launch pad. And that's interesting. So when they launch, they'll be launching from their own facility, privately owned, John.
Now we go to a scrub that is unusual, but again, you learn from it. Russia scrubbed what?
Yes, this was a Soyuz 2 rocket carrying a Soyuz capsule with three astronauts going to ISS. They were supposed to launch yesterday, but 20 seconds before launch, there was a scrub. They announced an abort. They said there was some technical issues having to do with fuel lines. I read the specifics, but I don't remember them right now. It was very technical, actually. But they scrubbed it, and the rocket actually made that decision. Looking at it, apparently they could fix this issue pretty quickly because they're now scheduling a launch. On Saturday, the 23rd, with the three astronauts. So that's, once again, you figure things out. Nothing went wrong. No one was hurt. They were able to recycle the spacecraft, figure out what was wrong, and they're not going to go for a launch in the end of the day.
All right. SpaceX has reorganized itself and is announcing a date for the fourth test. When, Bob?
Well, they're announcing when they'll be ready, John. Date is another story. A lot of my speculation earlier this week about what they'll do on the next flight was right, and a lot of it was wrong. They are saying they will be ready to launch for the fourth Super Heavy Starship test orbital flight by early May. They say they'll be ready then. That means that's about when they'll finish their investigation, SpaceX's investigation of what went right and what went wrong on the previous flight, and they will have instituted their fixes for doing so. They are not going to deploy any satellites. They said very clearly, we're not going to do that. We're going to focus on making sure we can get this thing to fly and to land. I expect they might do deployments of satellites as a test, but they're not going to quite do that yet. However, it's very important to note that though they might be ready by early May, they almost certainly not going to launch by early May. That's my prediction, and I could be wrong, but I've been right the previous three launches. What's going to happen is they'll complete their investigation then, and then what will happen is FAA will have to retype it. They'll say it's them completing their own investigation, but what really is going on is they have to type it up in their format and then declare it complete. And that'll take about a month, possibly more. So I'm predicting this launch will not take place until probably June, maybe July. Depends on how long FAA takes. The Biden administration wants them to take a long time to make sure they dot every I and cross every T. That's been the pattern since Biden took over. This FAA, I gather the people there would like it to go faster, but they're under constraints.
Bob, remind me, the last time we talked about Super Heavy being ready to be operational, and I don't remember how many times it has to test perfectly for that to be true. Is that a status that you achieve, like a merit badge?
This is engineering, and the way SpaceX works, it's iterative. Every launch, they refine, they improve, they update, they correct. So let's use Falcon 9 as an example. They started to launch that operationally, what is it, around 2011? But it wasn't until, I would say, 2017 or 18 that they pretty much had finished, completed development, because they kept changing and upgrading and revising. But it was operational by 11. And so Super Heavy, once it consistently achieves its ability to launch Starship into its trajectory for orbit, which it had done now for two flights in a row, then it's operational. That doesn't mean they're done upgrading, fixing, changing, and revising it, but it is operational. And as far as I'm concerned, it's pretty close to operational right now. It's not reusable. It's expendable. They haven't yet landed it, but it's operational. That's how I look at it. So I hope that answers your question.
SpaceX is launching a cargo Dragon. Does this even make the news anywhere, Bob?
In the space field, those who are interested in space, like on my website, it does. But there are two launches that I want to talk about. I keep track of every launch, and I post it when it happens, to keep track of who's leading and doing the most launches. So SpaceX did a Dragon cargo launch to ISS. This is their 30th time they've done this week. This week is their 30th launch. They did it this week. The first stage completed its sixth flight. What was interesting about that launch from SpaceX's consideration is that they launched from a Cape Canaveral launch pad that they have not launched a Dragon of any kind from for 4 years. This is a launch pad they were mostly using for their other commercial launches, either from other companies or Starlink. But they have reconfigured it to do manned Dragon flights, which means they can also do unmanned cargo flights. And the reason they did that is because they want to launch Starship Super Heavy from Kennedy, from Cape Canaveral. And to do that, though, their Starship Super Heavy launch pad was too close to the Manned Dragon launch pad that NASA and they were using to get people up and down from ISS. And NASA said, we won't let you launch from that Super Heavy launch pad site until you've got a second one farther away that gives us a redundancy of backup. And so they reconfigured their second launch site, which is farther away, and it's now operational, so they now can launch Dragons from their two launch sites in Florida. That means this success of that launch means they're one step closer to flying operational Super Heavy Starship flights out of Cape Canaveral. The second launch that I want to talk about is Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab launched a classified small sat for the National Reconnaissance Orbit this week. What's interesting is two things about this that are interesting. One, they did it from the U.S. from Wallops Island. It was its fourth flight this year, which means means they're really ramping up to doing the 20 flights they hope to do this year. And right now, Rocket Lab, American private company, much smaller than SpaceX, actually has more launches this year than Russia and could very well beat Russia before the end of the year, John.
About Rocket Lab, Bob, that's the other success. SpaceX overshadows it. Does it have plans to build a bigger booster, or is it going to be satisfied with the SAT?
Oh, no, no. It's in the process. Absolutely right, John. It's right now in the process of building its Neutron rocket, which would be almost completely reusable. It's a very clever design. And they hope to launch that by the end of this year. That's their goal. And it's not quite as big as a Falcon 9, but it would definitely be competitive with a Falcon 9. Be able to get some of the customers that go to Falcon 9 who will go to Neutron.
And
so they're definitely competitive.
And why do I ask? Because Bob has taught me the more competition, the better the engineering, and the faster the dreams can take us to new places. That's why Blue Origin has dragged behind. It can catch up. Rocket Lab, surprisingly, is number two now in innovation and ambition. SpaceX is clearly number one, but the more competition, the better. What is Orbit Fab?
Well, this is about competition as well, John. Orbit Fab is a orbital tug, orbital space refueling, orbital space servicing company. They try to focus on doing stuff in orbit. They have created a refueling system whereby they put a refueling port, where you stick your fuel through a fuel cap on a car, a special refueling port for satellites. And they've now unveiled that they'll sell that to satellite companies for $30,000 per unit. They've already sold about 100 to various government and commercial customers, but that's the price, $30,000 per unit. Once you've got their refueling port on your satellite, their refueling orbital vehicle will be able to bring fuel to your satellites and refuel it. Basically, they've created a large tanker with many smaller tankers that then fly to the different satellites to bring fuel. That's their system, and they're now selling fueling ports to satellites everywhere.
And the Spanish are in the business that started in Florida, or it started with you in Arizona. I can't remember the start of a high-altitude balloon, the first concept.
Well, concept was in Arizona. That company is still there, called Worldview. There's a second company in Florida. It's called Space Perspective. They're both building high-altitude balloons. Spain has a bunch. India has one. I think Japan has one. These are companies that all want to fly high-altitude balloons with a capsule underneath that would take people up for long, long flights about 20 miles altitude. The Spanish high-altitude company has now signed a deal with Saudi Arabia to do its second test flight from that country. They're moving forward, though they're under a court suit because they've been accused and have lost that they stole their technology from somebody else. I don't know how this is going to play out, but they are definitely doing a flight test out of Saudi Arabia. This is for tourism, but such a high-altitude balloon can be used for reconnaissance as well, and I'm wondering if Saudi Arabia is not interested in that job.
Yeah, it occurs to me, Bob, these high-altitude balloons sound a whole lot like the high-altitude balloons said to be launched by China over the United States. There was that one infamous incident over a missile base in the West and shot down off North Carolina. Is that the same design as we're looking
at? It's identical. It's not identical, but it's exactly the same thing. For example, the Tucson company Worldview that wants to do high-altitude balloons, its main business for the last few years, though, has been high-altitude reconnaissance balloons for the military. And so this is absolutely the same technology. And just because we caught China doing it over the U.S. does not mean that we're not doing it over them.
Right. There's a high-altitude gap that can be filled. Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.